Dus hij wil. Hij wil. Tell you some issues about sequences. It's so they're in line with a new organism as you adopted just before, because of course this inspired strongly by biology for part. So why talking about sequences in architecture? Of course there's a sequence in building, in raising a building. You cannot start with the roof, as the proverb say. But there's beyond that. We have a lot of things where we can apply this image of thought, this figure of thought of the sequences in architecture. So sequences are about time and change. Obviously, it's not so difficult. And last time I used the question, what's coming next, as the headline, so to say, for evolution and to discuss evolution and design. And of course, for sequences, this is true also. So sequences, we could say that any architect, and there's a lot of response, a strong movement about responsive architecture, of course, because of technological development, because of shift of paradigms from physics to biology. And but responsive architecture is nothing new. So if you have some parts which are moving autonomously on the facade or something like that, if you pass by, this is of course responsive. But any architecture is somehow responsive on some level. So it's not really new, and because everything is just whether you easily identify responsiveness is just a question of time scale. If you wait long enough, and if you have a time collapsing movie taking each minute one picture and making film from that, buildings could be seen as very responsive. So what's interesting for in case of responsiveness is not the responsiveness as such, but the arrangement of the different time scales and the patterns which emerge in this responsiveness. So, and how to talk about these patterns? How to talk about to measure these patterns and to create the sequences? Because this is, so to say, two-way. We can observe and we can analyze and could impose, so to say, saying, okay, this is a pattern now, this and this pattern. But if we understand it analytically, we can turn around the analytical method to produce sequences. And this is very, very, very important because the technological means allow us to do so. So how to, and basically you can condense that to how to create behavior. From another slightly different angle, we have design we can say intentional design. There are different qualifiers for design today. Last time I told you about evolution, and the next, of course, we have the architecture, where we can say also that there is a particular becoming in it. And behavior is something kinetic, something is moving, something is responsive. That means that when we ask what's coming next, in design, in architecture, and evolution, this is not. You could talk about design, architecture, and evolution from a non-empirical standpoint, without observation, so to say, without directly referring to a hard measurement. But you cannot do that with behavior. And then it is very, very important. And next week's sometime. I will talk more about that. The conditions of something are not determinable independently from the tangible determination of the condition itself. That means that every measurement you are doing, you have preconditions, and you, so to say, and these preconditions, you need some theory, you need an apparatus, and you need sensitivities and so on, and so on, a particular scale. You have to choose a lot of things before you actually can identify a pattern or doing a measurement. And these conditions determine what you are seeing. And there's so to say a bootstrapping, as it's called, so to say, both things, the conditions and the things you are seeing and perceiving and measuring and analyzing emerge at the same time. There's no primacy that means that there is the condition first or something like that. And this is the central idea of transcendental empirism. You need the philosopher behind that, that's Gilles Deleuze. Okay, model theory. Very, very short, only this sentence more or less. This has been said by a computer guy around 1990. So to say, it doesn't look very much different. That means, he says, any model demands for a set of understandings and conventions, of course, how to model and how to use the symbols and so on in order to work effectively with them. The higher the degree of the abstraction and so on, so. But it is similar, it seems similar to the statement before, but it is very, very different in fact. Because in the first statement you have a series, so to say. From his perspective, conventions are set before and they are stable. But this you could assume only for really materials. You could not assume that for behavior. If you start to do behavior and to measure behavior, there is no primacy anymore. There is no, you cannot put the model outside and conceiving it as a stable reference to the outer world. So sequences, some examples. This I already showed you. Built in 1875, in Louisiana, 150 years ago or 120 years ago, it looks like that. The same buildings. This one and this one. And this is an example from the book How Buildings Learn. This is in San Francisco. 100 years later, it didn't change so much. The buildings, if you closely observe the buildings, the building right aside, changed dramatically. And these phenomena that old fabric halls turn into theaters, and some theaters turn into fabric halls, and the stories are inserted and after the theater it probably became some kind of party place and so on and so on.
The research of Moratori, it's an Italian guy. It's the same but 35 years earlier. Same stories.
Which stories?
Yeah, you are telling there. This book is from the mid of 17th.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, there are several examples. Another sequence is something like that, and this is a very, very slow sequence. It takes 30 years or so. In some places, it takes 50 years. You start with a bare rock and with a forest. But this succession, as ecologists call it, is typical. There are some prototypes for this succession, and there's some probability that this will happen after a particular period of time. You will see different stages and so on. And then the question appears: how to talk about that? Another very famous sequence nowadays is this one, and it causes a lot of troubles because it seems very, very exactly. You even have some kind of letters in this DNA. And this was the paradigm for 50 years, And nowadays it is, so to say, recognized that there is no exactness anymore. Another sequence is this one, and now the miracle starts, because you can write down a sequence. You can write down a sequence here, which is pretty well defined, which is somehow reproducible. And nevertheless, you all know that music is not exhausted in just that sequence. There's much more. There are many, many, many different layers which are imposed by similarities, by repetitions, by subtle differences. Like, let me say this sequence and this sequence, which reflect to each other, and so on. That's from Mozart, the Requiem, I think. So sequences are not just hard items following each other, which you could take as a without taking into consideration what we call context or internal context building. This is also a very famous sequence, the triptych. You have 1, 2, 3, and this sequence that means showing a sequence in the media of images profoundly changes the quality and the character of images. It's not just one image anymore. The film, you know, and Godard, the filmmaker and film theorist, told us that film is creating time. No, it was Deleuze. After Godard, Deleuze in his cinema books, that film is creating bundles of time. And then again, I told you already this example. That's the floor plan from the Dutch embassy in Berlin by Rem Koolhaas. You see this sequence, which is unique. There is no repetition, and this is a reflection of what happens to a visitor needing some advice from the diplomats. So there's a clear sequence. The tricky thing is with this building that the spectators are becoming the projectors, and the building is the celluloid. So to say, because you are, so to say, wandering across the celluloid in this, and this creates very funny effects for the visitors. Difference in repetition is the philosophy to all the sequence stuff. And in this book, Deleuze argues around the question, what is first, the difference or identity? And all his much of his work is fighting against the dogma of identity. That means it seems quite easy to say identity is defined by A equals A. So then you have a logical statement, which is, as it is called, empty. It is a tautology. A equals A is empty. Both parts are interchangeable, and so on. But if you try to apply that, to say that some pieces are equal, you need a model. You need to think about similarity and all that stuff. And so to say, it's not. It's not talking about identity is not an innocent move, and the structure of Deleuze's philosophy is to start from the difference, and the difference is always first. So behavior is somehow a completely immaterial material. Bodies behave, and this immaterial stuff, of course, is related to information. Behavior is patterns in time, but if you say, okay, you have a planet and the sun, and the planet is circling around the sun, you have also a pattern in time, but that's not behavior, because there is no perception-performance coupling. There's no sensory in the planet. Somehow there is, but you had you have to widen it. It's relatively so there's no not this flexible coupling. These patterns do not exist in itself. So to say, there is no pattern in the world. The pattern exists in your head, in your brain, in your mind. That means after you are doing modeling. Like information, patterns are completely immaterial. Patterns and information are language games which are very closely related. Patterns are rollouts of deep probabilistic structures. They provide a space of potential signals. That means if you have two animals or two humans or whatever else, they use the behavior as a kind of a medium to arrange, as we have to use behavior and patterns in time to make us understandable to each other. And for this we need, so to say, conventions and a rule following, which is the deep structure of what you are seeing. You are seeing only my gestures, but there is a deep structure inside it. But that you cannot see. You need, as psychologists call it, a theory of mind, of my mind. Otherwise you wouldn't understand me. And this is true for behavior and for language. And so, some autonomy here. In the example of music, we saw that patterns establish relations across time. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a pattern, so to say. And because patterns are only meaningful for beings with a memory, they form also a diachronic network. That means you are remembering what I have said before, and there are multiple such relations, and you are constantly, if you listen to some narrative, you always are weaving something like a texture, like a fabric, a text or a music or DNA or the sequence of buildings and so on are not sequences. They are always forming immaterial networks. But these are not existing outside in the world, they are existing in your head. That's a repetition, what I told you last week, but it is quite interesting to contrast this to the behavior. That means that we have a form and the effect is and the extension of information. So this you also saw before, but this is also only a pattern. That means after interpretation, there is the pattern. You have to use it to experience it, and of course, that's a bad. This then is a bad experience. And here, this is the classical example. Therefore, Lutke calls it the new functionalism. It is probably not easily visible, but in this example, the reason. For building in this way was always, okay, we have this material and we have to build cheap. And we have to build houses for 20,000 people in this place, in this neighborhood. And these are material constraints. So to say, starting with the material, you will end up with such a structure. If the new structuralists do not end so far with this structure, is simply because there are software architects behind, so to say, which introduce a considerable richness where they can play around, and the result is not exactly the same anymore because the tools are a little bit different, but actually, if I think about deep decoration or the form of a building as decorative, there is. A certain kind of stereotypy, I would say. The same, much like the same as this. And of course, this is also a pattern, an organic one. So this example again, we have a pattern, and that's which means this is an interpretation. So why architecture and behavior? First of all, that's my conviction, because clients are beings, and because clients are beings, perception is involved. If you can, of course, dismiss that, but therefore any architecture is responsive if you take the respective time scale. But of course today, responsive architecture is media active. That means all this that stuff with the media facade, this one, or it is kinetic, like this one. But if it is responsive, that means it is also adaptive somehow. And Philip Beasley, which is more kind of an art project, currently it is in Venice exhibited. There are sensors involved. If you would like to produce interesting behavior with your architecture, with your installations or whatever else, you need some sensors. That means your machine you are building needs to sense whether there are people around and so on and so on. What currently is going around? No, I'm not so sure. Are there sensors built in there in these infrastructural panels?
The new ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Right. A lot of. Yeah, and over there, this rebuilding, the heating and everything is replaced to fit into a new paradigm. Ludke and his colleague from upstairs, Leibungut, developed, this new paradigm is heading to sustainability, and it is, so to say, some kind of smart, because there are a lot of sensors in it. That means the room then knows whether there are people or not. And then you get responsive architecture. If you then extend this approach that you have sensors, a wind machine and a temperature machine in that room, you could create any climate you wish. And this is a different kind of story than sustainability, a completely different story. It's about behavior. And that means
it's interesting. There's a term in the sensors with sustainability and effectivity. You always count the temperature as a quantitative thing, which is the physical behavior of the building. You try to control that. And the primary sensor in the new distributed system is CO2. So it's directly to people's behavior. It's not any longer, it's a qualitative thing, not a quantitative thing anymore. It's not to temperature, to this physical parameter, but to CO2. And it's not the supply air, but it's the return air. And this makes a thing from bottom, top, turn the whole story, and makes this flexible and this efficient. And therefore, at the end, this is much more sustainable, but invisible for all the promoters of sustainability, because sustainability always counts the temperature, not the behavior. They're really blind for this term and these kind of approaches. And at the end, if you count in terms of sustainability what is going on there, they really will be amazed how this is working. And what is very strange, we made a study for, and I can tell you tomorrow in detail, we made a study for Okeana, this is Dubai Ocean World, we had 20,000 apartments there with this kind of technology, and it was completely zero emission, nothing to see, not spectacular architecture forms, no big stories, no. You can do anything, you can tell big stories, but the technology is just smart. with zero emission, very few investments, less than any other system, and it's zero emission, better than Mazda City, which is a big story around, costs a lot of money and so on. And this is a turn, but it's complicated to establish this in the customer's mind and so on to make this shift. But it's just by nearly by accident sustainable.
Yes, but what you can see, what you can experience here with this example, and probably we can make an excursion that you can see that and grasp it, is the turn from physics to biology. That means sensing is nothing physical. Sensing is something organic. If you say, you can say something informational, but physical entities are not sensing actively, and sensing is an active process. Okay, and therefore this might be one reason that that people are do not understand this very well, because it is deeply embedded in our current culture. That means Newton and his physics is still very very vivid in our way how we think.
And it's still a big struggle with Hansa Glavin with building technology. He really wants to, and if things don't, he wants to control it in the old-fashioned way.
I have a slide for that.
Okay.
I used
really
this slide.
Struggling.
So, I think it's the next one. The structure of this strange relation. Of course, we have the materials outside. Example of the mouse. I could throw it and then it will crash it, and it is an irreversible thing. It is called an issue of causality. That means it's material, but there's the behavior. And so we have behavior and we have the sensory data. And the sensory data are coming from the world, like CO2, which is a material, and a concentration or temperature and so on. But how to relate now the sensing, the sensed data in quotation marks, because for the data you need a theory before, how to relate the sensory data to the behavior. For a physicist, that's not a problem, because it is given by nature's law. If you think about information, and you can design different kinds of behavior, you have suddenly a problem. You have to, and the problem is called design. Now, if you would import the old physicist's thinking to that, you would constantly end up with an extremely poor and boring behavior, which is perfectly predictable and which is not reflecting the possibilities or the potential behind that. So, to bridge this gap, so to say, between the material and the immaterial, we have different models from biology. We could have amoeba, fishes, molecules, and so on and so on, or swarms, or we could say access control. We could take, from sensory data to behavior, we need to establish security. And if you start with thinking about in terms of security, the sensing and the behavior, you create something like a dictatorship of the house, and there's a nice film about that, the iRobot. Responsive architecture, you can say it's this mutual game, tit for tat. That means the house starts to understand us. You can even can say me and you. There's quite funny projects from in the past at the ETH. And you can also dub it bones and stones. How to make it flexible. So this is my beloved metaphor for behavior, this glove. And you see, it's a kind of, I do not know whether it is a natural fur. It looks a bit like synthetic. So you cannot determine exactly the outer border of this glove. With a mouse, you can have the illusion that there is a clear defined border, a clear defined surface. You cannot define that with this glove. And now think about that, that these hairs could be sensory hairs. That means measuring electrostatic stuff and so on and so on. Instead, this glove extends to its surroundings somehow. And we have a thick zone, somehow a thick zone. And this is borderline. That means we have to dismiss Euclidean geometry at that point. And this is, for me, the metaphor for behavior, because we do not interact, regardless what we grasp. Even if I grasp the cup, I do not, so to say, it's a physicist reduction saying that I grasp the material. No, I grasp the potential of that material. I can do only that what the cup is allowing me to do with that. That means if I interact with you, or with my cat, or which I don't have currently one, but or with a sensing room, I can do only what this room provides, what the cat provides, what you provide. And that's the big problem of translation of kinds of life forms. That means sensing room has a particular kind of abstract space where you could put its behavior into it, okay? And to interact with this room, stuffed with a lot of sensors, you can only move in this room. That means we do not touch the walls, we touch the behavioral coating, as I call it. That means if there is a second instance, and the same thing is valid for that as well, there's a zone of interfusion, and this zone of interfusion is kind of a combination of information and material. It's informal material. I call that the zona extima. It's not intim, it's not an intimate zone, because it's not inside me. It's somehow my thick border. And this, in the last article here, I recently found, he also calls about designing the... He speaks about exactly the same kind of thickness here. And so I never would like to hear from you the term interface, never anymore. You can use it when I'm not around, but I will not accept. I will immediately intervene if you use the concept of interface. So because interface is the German word is even more impressive. They call it the place where you have to cut, Schnittstelle, you know. And it's a metaphor directly from cybernetics, I don't know, from physicist cybernetics, where you have a clear defined surface, like a screen. And that's of course also a bad delusion. There is no clear defined surface on a screen. See the book Neuromancer from Gibson, who recognized at first that we are constantly behind the screen. No, it was Alice Behind the Mirrors, Lewis Carroll. 120 years ago, it was quite clear that there is no clear surface. That means behavioral coding replaces the interface. Architecture is engineering. And if we talk about architecture and behavior, we are talking about engineering of dynamics. And if you are engineering dynamics, you end up with such a chart. That's now from ecology, but doesn't matter much. You have operators, you have filters, you have that's an operator, that's a reservoir, external factors, probably a diagram from Leibowood upstairs would not look like very much different. So, and you have, obviously, you have these nodes, three different kinds of nodes, and you have these influence arrows, which are edges. I will come to that later again. So, this is how engineers create simulations with graphical programming and so on. And artists use that for doing in Max MSP fancy stuff. Okay. Bunny?
Grasshoppers,
everything, everywhere. So, now behavior and engineering. Why do we need behavior? No, how could it fit to talk about behavior and engineering? So, an engineer starts with a control task, okay? Because the machine has to behave as he or she would like to. That means it is strict and planned, and usually there are a lot of equations or such a simulation system, and that means, see, you have this border around. The same border is appearing here, and this means that the site conditions for your ideas and for your formalized control setup is assumed to be perfectly constant. But this is not realistic. Site conditions always change, because site conditions is, so to say, the fancy name of the engineer for the world. But if the site conditions are changing, we cannot believe anymore in our large equation systems. They are simply not valid, as I told already last time. They still deliver exact values, that means values to the 10th digit behind the comma, but the value itself is without any sense. Instead, what comes into sight is interaction. That means sight conditions are not hermetic and constant, but they are open, and if you think that if you think about open site conditions or flexible site conditions changing, you immediately invoke the concept of interaction. You have users, you have moving targets, you have sensing, you have actions, of course, autonomous action more or less of the outside, and causation, that means the other part is acting upon you, upon the machine. And then talking about interaction of your control system, which might be some kind of computer or some kind of physical computing stuff, and some person who is interacting with that, a choreography appears. That means, like in dogs, if two strange dogs meet the first time, there is a particular choreography. And this could be quite complex. For humans, of course, it's the same way, true. But we are talking now about behavior, and about the if you take the long term perspective about development. Now, imagine you have set up 25 differential equations which works very nice. We could, and of course you have your actuator and your sensory. This could be regarded as the genetical level, but if you assume open site conditions and adaptive behavior, you have developed some memory, of course. And the memory is developing in reaction or during all these experiences. And that means after 10 years or so, an automaton which assumes from the beginning open site conditions is not the same automaton as in the beginning anymore. And the goal in programming, in setting up of adaptive systems, is to make this completely free, this relation between initial setup and the state in 5 years. It should be still compatible with your purpose, but it should, but you could not probably, or you should try, so to say, and this is quite difficult, you should try to get rid of material constraints in the beginning. And that's like, so to say, summarizes the dispute between Leib und Gut and our position here, because Leib und Gut tries to model the energy flows through the building with exactly defined site conditions. So, now starting with the sequence. That's a very simple sequence. Okay, we have three letters, and we have a particular sequence. Now, how to talk about that? Obviously, we have, already done a measurement. That means we have different observations which we have labeled with an A, B, and a C. And we could start to think about whether there are rules. And probably we have the A and the B, and the A and the B, and the A and the B, the A and the B. So it is quite frequent that the B follows the A. But not always. There is one case where this coupling is different. So to say, and for the future we could expect that some deviations from the A follows B follows A will occur in a low frequency probably, which we not exactly know, and therefore we have to speak about probabilism. Or is it now B A is also, but there's a B and a B. So it's there are different patterns. If you make some meditation about that. Some patterns, probabilistic patterns, appear, and I will show you how to get this without meditation. So to say, we have a dependency. Where's the mouse? Here's a dependency between these steps, and this is called nth order dependency. If you take just the one before, you have the first order. If you here the arrow indicates a second order dependency. And of course these dependencies could be quite complicated, like in language for instance. And then you have a mixed order dependency, and this also does not need to be constant through all the whole process which is creating this sequence. Okay? But often we have to assume that the way of the dependency, that means the order of the dependency remains stable throughout your process. That means your system should not change very very strongly. But theory actually do not prohibit that. So we are asking for a probabilistic framework. That means we are not looking about, okay, nice, we have an instance of A and B and an instance of A and B and so on. It's not case-based, very important, but we are looking for a probabilistic framework. That means a framework which allows us to express our expectations in that abstract space of sequence. So we have the same sequence. Let us say our observation stops here. The question is what follows? What follows, especially if we have complicated dependencies. And to determine this position, we resort to our experiences, to our measurement. That means we resort to the past. That's a deduction from the past. Could be this way, could be a different way. So again, but now we can also think about the dependencies into the future. That means that given a particular state, across the recent past, and a particular state means that this is already a probabilistic, that means a more or less probable state. It is not that state, it has a distribution. And this could cause not only one event, the A, but it could provoke or induce a probabilistic change or several probabilistic changes in the future. And then it is quite suddenly quite complicated. Here, this you can describe with a single layer structure, but for this you need a multi-layer nested structure. So, if you are trying to deal with deeply structured sequences and try to minimize ambiguities, you require conventions. That means if we would not know the grammar, let me say, it is always very, very difficult to identify words if two Malayan people are speaking to each other. It's a constant stream of rolling sounds, and I know they use letters and I know they use words, but it's completely impossible for me because I do not know their grammar and the structuring of how the words are organized. It's like a machine sound somehow for me. For the European ears. That means without grammar you have no chance to decode complicated arrangements. And therefore grammars are always, since Christoph Alexander, always have experienced some attention. The problem is that people are using grammars not in a probabilistic way. The basic idea how to deal with that is to set up a table. And for this table, we need an alphabet. That means, for instance, in this case, the ABC. We need the concept of probabilities. That means probability is between 0 and 1. And a state space framework. That means we have to accept the idea of a state. And that's a little bit problematic because anyway, I drop that for now. But it's not always possible to say that something, a complex system, is in a particular state. Mostly we have, for instance, we are always in multiple states. And the guy who invented the formalism for that his name was Markov. And he, a mathematician, and he invented that in around 1900. And the idea was that only the more or less immediate past counts for the next step. Recursive deterministic long-range correlations, as it is emerging with the subdivision of Michael or L grammars, are excluded in that. So we have again this graph, and now we have here nodes and the transitions, and each node probably you could say that's of type A and of type B or C, and the transitions we say, okay, from that node to that node we have a particular probability, and we end up with a table. So, and this works this way, we say we have a, and this table is capturing all the observations across time, and you write down the ABC on both sides. It's a symmetrical table, okay? And then we are measuring how often, for instance, the transition of C to B occurs. And if we meet one, B to C, we make here a tick, and then we make from C to B, we make here a tick, and so on. That means we say we are in state B, then we say we correct our experiences for the transition B to C, then we are in C, we go around, from C, and then we look up or do the next measure. That means we have preceding, all the precedings are here and the succeedings are here. Then we are inserting the probabilities. That means the transition from X to B, from all transitions for you can observe for X. 20% will be followed by, succeeded by a B, and 80% will be followed by a Y. Is this clear? Not so difficult, I think. Not clear. So, if you, we could do it. This is your observation. Okay.
This is for programming without programming.
Yeah,
so this is perfect.
What's your question exactly?
Well,
what is this for?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is how can we use this part of
If you are going to do, if you are going to do responsive architecture, you have to need, you will need concepts to talk about sequences. Okay, and even for Kohlhaas, if you have a large building, or if you talk about people moving around in a city, what they are doing, you need some methods, some tools to talk about that. That means everywhere you have sequences. Okay? And
that's the methodology to learn from the past in an open environment, just from the past, to get some way for the next steps. Because it's always, if you're there, and the question is what to do next. Any kind of instance, if you want to have the design for the building, or the behavior of the building, or the behavior of some machines in the building, or of people in the building, you just want to address that. Look at that as a sequence, and just to try to understand what they are doing without reasoning about that, and try to understand how they behave, and have some kind of correlating of you and the machines, the house and the others, and so on. This is a very abstract model of doing some codings without codes.
So you have, if you say, okay, we are building an automatic door opener. Okay, I go into the door, waiting, nothing happens. Probability is zero. There could be even the sensor, but somehow it's anonymous and it doesn't open. But it should always open. So the probability is one. In this case, you have a deterministic machine. But if you would have a media facade, and someone is stepping before the facade, and then the facade is always blinking three times, then you have programmed an if then statement. Of course, in the way you have a sensory, you have a behavior three times blinking, and you have. As a designer, you have to link this with a small program. Okay, is this interesting? The programming or the three times blinking?
The programming.
Now I'm talking about the three times blinking.
Wow.
We are doing programming not for our own enjoyment, and we are architects are not building buildings. For their own enjoyment. Some do.
A little bit, they do.
Geary. Okay.
That was really striking in Vienna. The big topic were media facades, and most of them were blinking lights.
Blinking lights.
And it's just the same language as when that all started in 2003 or whenever
so
facades came up.
Every time in December the 5th, the Earth is a particular place in the universe, and then something happens. We know it is December the 5th. Okay, fine. What can you do with that? Nearly nothing. It's boring as fact. Okay, it's perfectly stable, but it's d- deterministic. And then one step further, if you have a building which should be adaptive, after 2 years you restart programming. And if the building is large, you are constantly programming, and that's then not interesting anymore, that's boring. That's extremely boring to program all the time, and doing all the time programming differential equations or setting up new differential equations. Of course you could make your money with that, but it's not interesting.
No, it's even making this kind of behavioral adaptive architecture impossible, because now, if for example you want to control these distributed systems and want them, have them very efficient with differential equations, the effort to implement that, it goes exponential to set these kind of, to keep these systems running. So the more you want to go on the efficiency, the more engineering work you have to do. And this is an exponential growth of engineering work. It makes it maybe impossible. So that's the limits of what you can afford. That's the one thing. And the other thing, if you have these media facets and you want to control the content is by far more expensive than in the facade itself. So the big problem is get real content that is not boring after a very short time.
Yeah,
the problem with all this is the content. And you are not able to just run a movie for advertisement all the time on the media facade. You're not able to run NBC all the time everywhere and so on. And the problem is you have to produce content. And the content is a problem. So kind of programming of the sequence and so on. And this is the costs, which make it impossible to install these kind of facades, because you do not know what to do with that, but boring stuff. And if there's a sequence of some blinking things or some stones which do nothing about the content itself, it is the same. People get bored by that. So either you can save all this money.
Is this interesting? Is this really interesting? To make the house looking like the pillbox?
Yeah, for 2 days.
Probably for 2 days, probably for 2 seconds, depends on your intelligence.
It depends how much money you can
get. Who?
It depends how much money you can get.
Who?
The owner
is you?
The owner of the guy who's living there.
So there's a little bit of a different story, and Vera probably will you already did. Of course, aspirin is a symbol, and there's an immaterial value in it, and so on. But as a media facade, it's boring, and so it was even very, very difficult to set this media facade up. But anyway.
The problem with the house, for example, like that, is a media facade, it's 10, 20 million euro for a skyscraper. And if you want to have a return of invest in 2 or 3 years, but you need that minimum because it's broken and maintenance costs are, you need 7 million per year. So this means about 30,000 a day or something. So, and if you get bored with just to get the back of the big LEDs. If you get people bored in that, it's really complicated to measure that at 30,000 euros a day. So they get content on that. And these are the problems with the media facets, not the technology.
And the problem starts not with the material of the LEDs, the problem starts in thinking, because they are hard programming the stuff which is appearing on these facades.
So this is an abstract discussion how you can create meaningful content without predefined concepts or methodology.
This is this structure. This is first a formal structure, okay? But if you, I don't know, you will probably only learning to program afterwards. But in this table, you have a series of really, no, not a series, a really a large amount of if-then-else statements. And you easily can program to extend this table. And then you have a different program somehow. That's a kind of meta-programming you can achieve there. Because you are constantly changing the conditions and, so to say, the relation between the input and the output. And that's so programming is defined, to define the relation between the input and the output. And with this one, you can turn it flexible and to let it run and develop its own style, to make its own experiences and so on and so on.